Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, an all-new episode featuring an all-old monologue by the great radio storyteller Gene Shepherd. If you missed it in 1962, I hope you'll stay tuned. I'm familiar with three fine radio humorist storytellers. One was Garrison Keillor, of course. Back in the 1980s, I'd catch his News from Lake Wobegon monologues each week on NPR, usually skipping the rest of his two-hour variety show. Even better than Keillor was the Canadian Stuart MacLean. He had a weekly show on CBC radio called The Vinyl Cafe. I caught it on shortwave in the 1990s. MacLean is now dead, and Keillor is collecting unemployment. Their common ancestor was Gene Shepherd. Shepherd flourished in the 1960s. Late at night, I think 5 days a week, he did a 45-minute show on WOR AM and FM in New York City. All 45 minutes of each show was his monologue. Naturally, the quality varied. At his best, though, Shepherd was very good indeed. He was a wry and insightful critic of the vices and follies of Americans. Mostly the follies. Twice in the past, I've condensed a Shepherd monologue and put it on New World Notes. I do so for a third time today. The piece is about, quote, "the thin thread of the divinely absurd that runs through all of us," unquote. For example, our elephant leg umbrella stands, our bed and washing machine vehicles, the rationalizations we offer to justify our love of space flights and of war, and our favorite rhetorical question, who's covering up? From his broadcast of September 19, 1962, here is Gene Shepherd.
Over the weekend, I spent about 3 hours watching these canned television shows. You know, the realistic kind? Where there's a scene where the cops wind up chasing the guy around the roof. Have you ever seen, you know, around the roofs of the buildings up and down the west side there over by the docks? And they shoot it out, and the lovely girl winds up getting involved in the third reel, he's tearing down the fire escape, and he jumps into the room there, and he's always in the room with her, you know, this beautiful girl. Well, I saw at least seven of those over the weekend, see, and they're running around on the roofs. And I came to a conclusion there. These are called realistic television shows, because they're shot on real fire escapes and on real roofs. Wouldn't it be fantastic if life really was like that? I mean, really, wouldn't it be? If every 20 minutes you hear them shooting it out up on the roofs, you know, you go over in the 40s there, over by the roof, pow, 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 and Rocco the Lip, you see, is swinging up and down the fire escapes, and there's a beautiful girl wearing a shawl. Oh, Rocco, Rocco, please, I love you. Wouldn't it be wild? Oh, and think of the great headlines, and think of the wonderful newspaper stories. Every day you could pick up the newspapers, you know, and there would be all those stories in the paper. But all these fantastic things, and invariably, in every story, it would say that Rocco the Lip, while he was being chased up this alley, ran into this beautiful girl who had just come in on the boat from Italy someplace, and she was a beautiful girl, had a strange, striking resemblance to Elizabeth Taylor. And she fell instantly in love with him, and she didn't know he was a crook, but nevertheless, but once in the great while, though, something pops up right out of the paper that makes all of that jazz look like kid stuff, but kid stuff. And you never know where it's going to happen. Now, oh, yes, by the way, before we go any further, I would like to say that tonight's text is not for women and children. And if you fall into either one of those categories, I suggest you go down to WPAT, maybe. They've got some nice a nice ear-to-ear music. I imagine QXR now has a nice Haydn string quartet on. A couple of other stations got these gigantic recorded fist fights with these guys hollering through their nose. You might like that. And, you know, you got a lot of things you can do. You don't have to, so please, without kicking chairs over anything, please leave now. Now, getting back to our text here, did you read that wild story over the weekend? Now, I tell you how I happened to read it. I was walking along 3rd Avenue, and you know, along 3rd Avenue, way over there on the east side there, all kinds of little places where they sell used Victorian lamps and elephant's foot umbrella stands. Hey, by the way, did you ever see an elephant's foot umbrella stand? A real one? Well, one time I'm in an auction, and it's a great auction. And I really dig going to auctions, especially auctions when they're selling some old recluse's estate. And, you know, they've got all this wild stuff there, and they're selling it all out. And the auctioneer is trying to make everybody believe that it's wonderful stuff. And I'm sitting down in the crowd on the camp chairs. You know, they have these little stores with the camp chairs all sitting there, and up on a little stage is the auctioneer. And he's selling the estate of this well-known, very ancient, and very eccentric recluse who lived on the outside of Cincinnati, and he made all kinds of dough in the yeast business. So right there, you know, he's got a lot of stuff going. You could tell it, right? He made yeast. So this old gentleman had passed into the great beyond, and he'd left behind him a collection of effluvia, the like of which the average pack rat could not even comprehend. So anyway, I'm sitting there, and they got this big chandelier up there, and the auctioneer is up there. He's pounding away with a gavel, you know, and all of his assistants are bringing stuff up. And he says, and now we have number 172 in the catalog, number 172 in the catalog, a genuine African pachyderm umbrella stand. This is a pure piece of Victorian artwork, a very rare piece of Victorian artwork, and probably the like of which will seldom be seen again on the face of the earth. A beautiful piece which undoubtedly will go for hundreds of dollars more than we are asking for it this afternoon. Number 172 in the catalog, will you please bring it up? Well, they put up on the stand there an elephant's foot. Actually, it was an elephant's leg. Oh, boy, cut off at the knee. And there is this elephant's leg standing with the toenails. A real elephant's leg. And sticking out of the elephant's leg there, they had hollowed it out somehow. I don't know how they hollowed it out, and they had a brass thing set down in the middle of it. And sticking out of it were a couple of sample canes. And he said, number 172, a genuine pachyderm umbrella stand, I guess he was using the phrase pachyderm because he figured that everybody, if they didn't look really sharply enough, would think it was teak wood or something else equally acceptable outside of an elephant's knee. Have you ever looked at an elephant's knee, really? Cut off there at the top with an umbrella sticking out? So he's going, well, I'm looking at this thing, and I think, by George, you know, you can't give up hope. You just can't give up hope. And over the weekend, I'm walking along on 3rd Avenue, and they got all these shops where they're selling stuff like that, you know? They're selling little paddle wheel steamers, and they're selling all kinds of just effluvia, you know, all the junk. Can you imagine what it would be like if mankind somehow disappeared from the face of the earth tomorrow and left all his stuff behind him? Just left it, you know. Just even better than that, I would love to see a pile of all the junk, just the junk of mankind piled up. I wonder how high it would reach, this pile. How big the base would be, how much it would weigh, and how many hopes it would contain, how many distorted, wild, strange, beautiful, exquisite, circumscribed dreams all piled up there. With those plastic streetcars and those leather whales and those elephant's toes. Oh, boy. While I'm walking down there, I'm looking in the window, see, and I figure, well, this is a part of man that has no relationship to his action. You follow me here? It's the stuff like you drip off. You know what I mean? It's just sort of, it's the slough off of man. It doesn't have any real relationship to what he does. We have here news item, Dateline, London, February 15th. A court in Aldershot ruled today that if you want to drive your bed through the streets, you must display L or learner plates obtain proper automobile insurance, hang license plates at either end, and install a braking system. Richard Brown, a 19-year-old student who did not follow these rules, was fined the equivalent of $36 and suspended from driving beds or cars for 1 month. He drove his bed, powered by a motorcycle engine, for 2.5 miles through Farnborough 5 months ago. The processional committee that fined him was also held for aiding and abetting Mr. Brown. Coincidentally, today the student who is now in the Royal Aircraft Establishment is the only known bedstead driver in the country. He was barred from the road. However, we were watching and will watch this youth's procedure in the future with a great deal of interest. All together now. All together. Hold it there. Hold it. Hold it, all of you. Hold it. Stop it. Stop. Oh, oh, oh. Now. It's just that... Emotionalism will get us nowhere. Did I tell you about the time the lady... Of course, this is the kind of thing that you don't like to tell children. If there are any children awake, all I have to say is that you're going to learn it somewhere. And there was this lady who lived out in Cincinnati. I'll just tell you the true story of it. I might as well lay it right out here in the line. There was a lady one time when I was working in Cincinnati, and I saw the incident happen. I will never forget it because it was one of those things, you know. It wouldn't make the Reader's Digest, but let me tell you, it made my psyche. It also made my day. I was walking, you know, Cincinnati is a very hilly town. You know, very up, you know, up, down, so on. And I'm going uphill one day on Vine Street, and you won't believe this, but I saw a lady who seemed to be otherwise normal and all right, riding in an automatic washer down the middle of Vine Street in Cincinnati, going downhill against the wind. This chick went through two lights and didn't do anything but just sit and wave at people. Well, I saw her go past, you know. And, it was... Oh, you're interested in what? Well, it was a Maytag. And I waved at her when she went past. And she was sitting in the clothes dryer compartment. You know, they have two compartments. She's sitting in the clothes dryer compartment. And somehow I had the feeling that she had had a companion when she started out. And he stopped off somewhere. And they just went right on, disappeared in the distance, and I never heard another word about them. I saw it happen. I was expecting to read about it in the paper, but you know they hush up the real stuff. Everybody's covering up. By the way, are you covering up? Oh. Stop cutting out, you guys. Speaking of covering up... Oh, well, you see, the reason I told the women and children to get out, and I feel very good about it now, since it's quite obvious that the theme that came out was the theme that we had calculated would all along, and that's that thin thread of the divinely absurd which runs through all of the actions of all of us. You don't think for a minute that big countries, I don't care, name any big country, really wants to disarm? Do you really? Why, that's all that history's ever been about, is wars and what happened just after them. No, seriously. It's like telling some guy whose whole world has been based on killing cockroaches that from now on he's got to give up killing cockroaches. Stop it. No, seriously, it's not going to work. And it's interesting to note that every time there is a disarmament, any kind of disarmament talk, everybody gets all flustered. Everyone suspects a trick on the other guy's part, of course. And so, naturally, people disarm disarm in the mind, and then they arm more in reality to prevent any such tricks like this happening. It sort of piles up one after the other until finally we wind up with tiny little bursts of impatience that have nothing at all to do with disarmament or armament. It's just kind of the bubble festering to the top, the boil on the of the psyche. just pops like that, you know. And there's the this little thing, you know, comes out of the news. I mean, it just says, you know, the letters to the editor. It says, Brooklyn, won't the Transit Authority do something about them fans? Why don't they do something about them fans and the new IRT and BMT cars? They've been in operation all winter. Signed a frozen sardine, rotten bums. Rotten bums. It's just a lot of talk. I mean, I'm all over. The world is, in fact, composed of talk. So everybody, we're going to shoot this rocket up now, you know, with a guy in it. And so everybody talks about all the scientific information we're going to get. That isn't why we're doing it. We want to see if we can shoot a rocket up. It's like kids, you know, when a kid is going to do something, when he's going to throw a rock up in the air to see how high it goes, he doesn't try to pretend, you know, that what he's doing it is to measure air currents on rocks. You know, he just runs the rock, you know, lets her go, you know. Well, as man gets older, he does the same thing. He throws rocks up in the air, or he, you know, or he breaks windows, which is the equivalent of a war. But as he gets older, being mature, he has to learn all kinds of ridiculous rationalizations for it. This is a kind of maturity, you know. We call it maturity. So he invents all these economic things, and he invents all these wild, beautiful stories. Like we have to have the information on the upper air currents on the sporadic E layer there, up around the Van Allen belt. We've got to have that information. So nobody knows why, you know, but we wind up, well, putting $87 billion into a gigantic rock to throw up. And I can only say, fine. I can say there's nothing wrong with that, actually. Because what else is there to do on the Earth anyway, really? Because this is the kind of talk that women, I'm not quite sure, understand, you know? Because I don't think they have the same kind of itch that men have. That the itch that men have to throw things as far as they can be thrown, to fly up as high as you can fly, to jump as high as you can jump. All these things are tied up, oh boy, wow, biologically, psychologically, and everything else, with the problem of being male. Women don't have this problem, obviously. They have others. But what they have, you see, men do not understand in an equal measure. Now, I'm sure that all the women who are listening say, what does he mean? I understand men. Oh, no. No, you don't. Any more than the man really understands your basic motives. We have a few little areas of common boundary we share, men and women, a few areas of common discussion points. But it's like two, do you understand what I mean, Ed? It's really like two races sending notes to each other, written in two different languages. but vaguely written the same way, you know? So here we're going to send these things up. And I think that more and more, of course, it's not a matter of thinking, I know this is a fact, that more and more psychologists are becoming interested in mankind as a whole rather than the individual ill. And more and more, they're beginning to impinge or to dissect that little area there, that little itch that mankind has had to throw things up as high as they can throw it, to see what'll happen, just to see what'll happen. You know, that explains a lot. If you do something and you say, well, I just wanted to see what would happen, that's right. But what does it explain, you see? It doesn't really explain why you want to see what would happen. And so this incessant, insensate drive for knowledge and for understanding of the physical universe has led us into some very interesting paths. But we've never really explained why we want to know these things, really. Now, there can be some very loose, broad generalizations, and I might say rationalizations. For example, it betters the lot of man on Earth. Do you really believe that? Do you really believe you're happier than, say, somebody who lived 500 years ago? Really happier? On the other hand, you see, the guys who live 500 years from now are going to have things you don't know about. Are you unhappy about it? Do you feel a terrible sense of being cheated because you don't have the instantaneous telepathic method of non-communication which people will have in the year 2750? Do you think Washington felt cheated because he never saw Gunsmoke? Seriously, you know? But we like to think they did, you know? That the poor old Jefferson left this mortal coil feeling cheated. By George, he just missed out. Just missed out on Vista Vision. If he'd have stuck around, he might have seen it. And yet, you see, the interesting problem here is one again of time and space. The time you occupy a certain amount of cubic inches of space versus the time and space occupied by somebody else at another point on the graph, just as a big long line there. But nobody quite understands why we have this. No, they don't. They really don't. Now, a lot of people are going to come up with glib answers, but no one has really explained that one interesting facet of all of us. And that's this thing to know everything. Just see what it would do, you know? Just see what it would do. No one really knows about this. And if you're going to tell me, come up and say, well, they're doing this because, you know, if they find out how it is on Saturn, they will discover how they can better the lot on Earth. Oh, come on. Everybody wants to go to Saturn just to see what Saturn's like, that's all. Why don't we just admit it? We want to see what's there. Why do we have to come up with all this, you know, this jazz? Maybe they figured if we said the truth, no one would pay for it. But I suspect they would pay for it quicker. If you laid it out, you know. They said, we want to shoot a rocket up, see how high we can shoot one up. Let's get the dough up here. We're going to shoot this big one up there as far as it can go. And I would pay. But if they come up, you know, and they want to tell me we want to find out about the cosmic rays and about the number of times the gamma ray bounces off the number three E'2 shield. You know, come on, lay off. I mean, I mean, after all, my life is short. I just want to see how high you can shoot it. I'm sorry, that's my attitude towards it, which is a terrible attitude, you know. I suppose I should have the proper 20th century attitude, which is the non-romantic or the academician attitude, where I could couch all my secret yearnings in very involved technical language, which when all boiled down says we want to shoot it up in the air. That's what it really boils down to. We want to find out. Of course, we explain we have gamma rays, we go into quantum mechanics, we go into the whole routine, you see, to kind of hide the whole thing. It's like a giant speakeasy we're running of the mind, you know? That everybody pretends that everything else is going on, but what he really wants is a drink. That's all. I want a drink. We rationalize all over the place. And, of course, on the other hand, if people ever would admit why they have wars, for example, we might begin to make some progress towards not having them. You know, any good psychologist will tell you that the minute a man who has got a fixation, say, for example, an alcoholic, admits that he has one, really admits it, you know, I says, well, all right, now, where do we go from here? Then there might be a chance of going, but there's obviously no guarantee of a cure, but there is a chance. But we never admit this. Hardly, you can't get anybody hardly ever to admit that. Why? Oh, what do you mean? Go to war? We get a kick out of that, all that shooting, all that holler on, all them fireworks, and people yelling and fist fighting, all that, you know? Is there one among you here who, if you saw a fist fight across the street, wouldn't be strangely drawn toward it? Huh? And don't come up and tell me, well, it's because, you're against war now because you're afraid you're going to get hit in the eye. Oh, no, I don't think so either. I think it's how you get hit in the eye. Isn't there one among you who never to himself has said, you can see yourself charging up the hill there at San Juan Hill, you know? Teddy Roosevelt's hauling charge, and you're running up there behind him, you know, and you take this ball through your shoulder, and you continue to struggle up there, carrying the flag aloft. Come on. You know it's true. You know, one of the saddest sights of all is this little 97-pound weakling standing on the library steps saying how much he hates football players. Does he really? Or does he hate non-football players even more? It's very complicated, you know. It gets why don't they turn them fans off on the BMT? Who's covering up, Wagner? Wise guy. I know how this works. Well, nobody's going to tell me how it works. I know how it works. They're not covering up. They're not telling you nothing. You don't think they're going to tell you everything about what that thing is going to do when it gets up there, do you? Let me tell you, they're covering up. Who's covering all them guys in Washington, everybody, the big shots? What about that match? You heard about that match that they invented? You light it once, and in fact, you can light it all the rest of your life. It's a match that lasts a lifetime. They bought that one up, boy, and stuck it away in a safe. You heard about that guy that invented the motor that runs on water? They bought that one up, stuck it away in a safe. They're not letting nothing out, them guys. Not giving you nothing. They're smart. How'd they make all their dough? How can they sell their gas? Huh. Yeah, they're wise guys. Let me tell you, 15 cents fare on a subway? Let me tell you, Jack, it's going to be 20 cents before the year is out. And why? Who's getting all that dough? Who's sticking all that dough in his pocket, huh? I'll do it tomorrow. Yes, I will. Well, you think not, you watch me. Now, this is a common attitude. You know the attitude? Is there anyone among you who hasn't heard about the carburetor that gets 40 miles to the gallon of gas? And they bought it up from this inventor? They bought it up? Yeah, I know. Got it in a safe. Speaking of the safes, boy, I'll tell you who's got a loaded one. You ought to drop by down to the Mandarin house. Wise apple. The Mandarin house on 13th Street between 6th and 7th. Who are they? Who are they? What do you mean, who are they? All them guys in Washington, the big guys, the big shots, guys with all the dough. Who are they? You know who they are. Mandarin house. Some of the best Chinese food in this whole man's eastern seaboard. And they're open every night. By George, till midnight. They are. They got everything down there. They got all the whole works there. They're open 7 days a week. What do you mean, who are they? You know who they are. Stop it. You're pushing again. They don't tell you nothing, Mac. Crying out loud. Keep your knees loose. Some nights, it's awful, awful dark. You know, just remember that. Just remember that elephant foot. And from time to time, remind yourself of the man in the snake house. And maybe you'll understand.
Gene Shepherd from his show on WOR of September 19, 1962. And from Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening to New World Notes. You can find us on the web at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Illegitimi non carborundum, keep your knees loose, remember that you are not alone, and please come back again next week. Till then.